documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the New World Order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
So just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, along with Vicki Davis, here with you on this November 11th, 2017 edition of the broadcast. Nice to have you with us once again as we document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. And we are examining all the crazy things that are happening in our world today. We weren't on the air last week, by the way, because I was in the hospital with my wife. She was the patient, and some of you might remember how I have talked about this on the program before, that she has been having some health issues lately, and I think we finally got to the bottom of what was happening. It didn't take very long for those bloodhounds at University of Michigan Hospital to figure this out. Why other people throughout the years haven't been able to figure it out, I don't know. What I'm talking about, because University of Michigan Hospital, I got to say, I'm very impressed with them. And if every hospital was the way they are, then I might have a little more faith in the medical profession. They were very good, very friendly, very professional, and they get to the bottom of things and at least get you some kind of path to treatment. Now, none of these doctors ever have any clue about nutrition and natural remedies or anything like that. That's never a part of the equation. So with that caveat, they're pretty good, though, in terms of the medical field as we have it today, let's put it that way. But anyway, we were in there only, we weren't even in there 24 hours, but, you know, immediately they had her hooked up to all these sensors on her head, glued to her head, and the EKG on her chest. And they, overnight, she had two 15-second in length seizures, two of them that were 15 seconds each, and from that, they were able to form the hypothesis that she actually had epilepsy, which the doctors have been up till that point saying throughout the years that this is not what it was. And so the next night, she didn't have anything, and the night after that, she had another one. So they've got her on some medication now, which seems to be doing very well for her. She's been very much like her normal self so far. The only thing is the medication does make her a little bit drowsy, a little bit tired. But other than that, she's able to, you know, power through that particular effect of the medication. It's looking like it's better. And so we'll have to wait and see long term. There has been other times that she's had good days and that sort of thing, but we're cautiously optimistic that this might work. So that's the story. That's why we weren't on the air yet. Last week I was planning on, if they had held her longer than Saturday, I was going to leave, come here and do the show, and then go back. The problem was is that they decided they were going to release her. There was talk Friday about releasing her on Saturday, and then I quickly realized if that happened, I can't roll running off someplace and leaving her there, so that wouldn't go over very well. So especially since anybody who's ever stayed in the hospital knows you don't want to be there a second longer than you have to be. It's almost like you have to recuperate from having been in a war or something. It's really amazing how that takes a lot out of you. And I wasn't even the patient. So anyway, that's the story there. Hey, Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Hi, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Lots going on in our crazy, mixed-up world here. We've got.
I know. I have a hard time keeping up. I need a research and writing staff of about 12.
I know. I've felt like that throughout the years. You know, we've got the United Nations coming out and saying that we need to rethink ways to govern cities. Marking World Cities Day, I guess, was October 31st, which I think is really appropriate. Halloween for World Cities Day.
Yeah, perfect.
A senior United Nations official on Tuesday spotlighted the need to find innovative ways to govern cities, as more than half of the world's population live in urban areas. He said the scope and speed at which people access information and interact among themselves is unprecedented in history, and institutions need to react to these new ways to exercise citizenship. Okay, I said he. It's Joan Kloss, the head of the UN Human Settlement Program. I guess that is a female, a male. In his message for the day, whose theme this year is innovative governance, open cities.
Open city. Oh man, yeah. And the UN is so great at all human relations, right?
Yeah. Well,
we have been at war, perpetual war, since the United Nations was created.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They're good at genocide. They're good at killing people. They say we should, in the name of peace, by the way. We should not fear innovation, he stressed. The adoption of the new urban agenda in 2016 at the UN Conference on Housing and Sustainable Urban Development, widely referred to as Habitat 3, has given a new vision on how to build, plan, and manage cities in a more inclusive, safe, resilient, inclusive. They have inclusive in here twice. They must want to be really inclusive and sustainable way. Who wrote this?
They really are trying to move into position of being the world governing system. I've been kind of studying a speech that Gorbachev gave in 1988. It was his New World Order speech. And that was the suggestion. You know, that the United Nations take a larger role in the management of people, basically, and that the governments of the nation states sit out as people resolve their differences on their own. So. Yeah. So you could say that what Gorbachev was asking is that the nation states abandon their own people.
Their own governing role.
And leave them alone to fight out the differences between cultural and social and governing systems. And it actually seems to me that that's precisely what they've done in this country.
Yeah. Well, they... It's moving along pretty rapidly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that is being pushed in a big way, as always, is this global warming. Now, I live in a part of the country. I don't know how your weather is out there, but it has been cold, cold, cold here. I mean, it's gotten down to, I think, the high teens at certain times. But I know for a fact it's been in the 20s. We have this big Arctic blast evidently coming from the north, and it has enveloped at least our state. And I don't know how widespread this is. I haven't really went on and checked out the temperature map. We do have a link to that up on the website. But now we got Jerry Brown saying that the world needs to be brainwashed to accept global warming. Apparently he's in Vatican City. Governor Jerry Brown challenged the world's religious leaders to further engage as he minimized the negative effects of President Trump on meeting the climate change challenge. Now, I'm not going to read this whole thing because I think he's the guy that's really brainwashed. But he says, and this is from the Sacramento Bee, Brown acknowledged that achieving transformation will not be easy, citing his recent visit to the Eastern Economic Forum in Russia, where world leaders gathered for discussions about the trade about trade with scant mention of climate effects. At the highest circles, people still don't get it, he said. It's not just a light rinse that's required. We need a total, I might say, brainwashing. We need to wash our brains out and see a very different kind of world. Interesting choice of words, isn't it?
It is. Those are the same words that, what's his name, the attorney general used in reference to guns, right? We need to really brainwash people.
Yeah, I forgot about
and
that.
And actually, in a way, I kind of agree, but the way that I would put it is just shake the cobwebs out of their brains so that they start thinking.
Yeah, good way of putting it. In other words, don't. You know, but he's I could see him advocating torturing people and using MK Ultra. And you know, these people have been trying to brainwash people from day one. You know, when you suppress your opposition, if your arguments have merit, you don't have to try to shut people up. That's a clearest sign that your argument doesn't have any merit when you have to shut up the opposition. You have to bully them into silence.
What's the name of the person that you were talking about?
Jerry Brown.
Oh, Jerry Brown.
Yeah,
Jerry
Moonbeam.
Brown. Yeah, Jerry Brown. Something really, really wrong with that guy. Maybe he is a victim of brainwashing himself.
That could very well be. And then we see from News Target, Prince William's arguing for urgent depopulation efforts in Africa. They say, Prince William recently warned that the population growth in Africa is putting a tremendous amount of pressure on the natural world and driving many species of animals to extinction. Those evil human beings.
Let's have some genocide here.
Yeah, yeah. That's what he's advocating.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not so overtly, but it really kind of is overt. I mean, when you're saying that...
If it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Africa's rapidly growing human population is predicted to more than double by 2050, a staggering increase, and this is a quote from him, a staggering increase of 3.5 million people per month. And they said he explained this during a recent event hosted by the Tusk Trust, a charity that is committed to protecting African wildlife. He continues, says, there is no question that this increase puts wildlife and habitat under enormous pressure.
Well, you know what? I have a suggestion for him. He's head of the military over in the UK. He ought to just get all the UK soldiers and go over and take care of business, but leave us out of it.
Well, and if that happened, I think the world would be outraged. That's not how they do it.
Well, they would lose, of course.
That's not how they...
they would be so far, vastly outnumbered that, you know. But that's the thing is that the prince wants... What he wants is the United States to join with him on a genocide mission.
Well, what they
and
do...
I just don't think we should do that. You know?
Do you remember the Coney thing? The Coney, you know, they claim the African terrorist Coney had surfaced when he hadn't been around for over 6 years.
Yeah, I vaguely recall that.
Yeah, this is how they operate. Everything they do with covert operations and lies. I could see, you know, in fact, we got a deadly airborne plague in Madagascar, which is the island nation off the east coast of Africa. I think Prince, what's his face here, William, is talking about the Western Africa. It doesn't really matter because Africa's become kind of a gold mine for these people. You know, they want to be able to harvest all of the natural minerals and all the things that are in, you know. Everything that's in Africa, they want to take. And they want to leave the African people with nothing left. And in fact, How long has the United Nations been talking about, you know, we're talking about rebuilding cities here. How long has the United Nations been talking about bringing people up out of poverty?
Oh, forever. I mean, that was the whole idea for the founding of the United Nations. Freedom from fear of poverty and hunger.
Yeah, they got the Millennium Development Goals, which now they've rolled into Agenda 21. That's why it's morphed into Agenda 2030.
Right.
But what's the progress for Africa? How much has been done to better them? But when we contrast that with the poverty that's been created in the rest of the world, you know, and people will quickly point out, oh, but Darren, the stock market's soaring. Darren, you know, look at how good everything is. Look at how robust the economy's become here in the United States. And
well,
it's all just smoke and mirrors.
Yes, it's media, it's image. Everything is image. I realized that as I was working on that speech, that the media is being used to sell a vision of what the world is when reality is something really quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with our government basically abandoning American values and principles and leaving the people to fight these ideological battles on our own, the media becomes very useful in bringing up what would normally be considered enemy operations on our soil.
Mm-hmm.
All these Marxists running around, they really do want to change our system of government.
Absolutely, they do. And unfortunately, with the population that we have, I'm afraid that they're going to get their way because the younger people don't understand the importance of resisting communism. And, you know, Benjamin Kidd said it, you know, give us the young. Give us the young, and in a single generation, you know, we'll transform society. And I'm paraphrasing here, but
right. And they basically have the young at this point. I mean, I had no idea that this kind of stuff was going on in the schools. I doubt very many parents did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, parents have been so busy pursuing their, you know, the American dream. And that's what it was all along, a dream.
Yeah.
That we haven't awakened from the dream and faced reality. So they say, though, according to the Telegraph, Prince William's continued urbanization, infrastructure, development, cultivation, all good things in themselves, but they will have a terrible impact unless we begin to plan and to take measures now. We are going to have to work much harder and think much deeper if we are to ensure that human beings and other species of animal with which we share this planet can continue to coexist. Now, what is he talking about here? He's talking about caging people. That's what it really boils down to.
Yes, the people, as they're herded into the cities basically become a zoo. A zoo for people.
Yeah, well, you know, we can't be allowed to go into the rural countryside. You know, we can't be allowed to do anything. We have to be basically in a world where we are behind the prison bars and the animals are free to roam. So, anyway, yeah, I mean, and I mentioned that deadly plague in Madagascar. Wasn't it, it was just like a month and a half ago or something I told you that we had, weren't we, I specifically remember saying on this broadcast that we were overdue for some kind of outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and
because of the funding, everything boils down to the money.
Well, and it also boils down to the global agenda of population reduction. The world is far too sophisticated, and war actually disrupts economic activity. So they're really basically using covert means, covert methods to eliminate people, to reduce the population.
Right.
Of course, pharmaceuticals are the best way to do that. Because
yeah.
they can put forth the media message of humanity, you know, they're helping these people, and oh damn, you know, a lot of them died. Whoops.
Yeah, oops. Well, you know, collateral damage. The World Health Organization is now saying that there's 1,801 suspected cases of this airborne plague. And I wonder where this airborne plague came from. You know, as we have the airplanes spraying something over us all the time. I was outside yesterday and looked up at the sky, and I mean, the whole sky is full with chemtrails, with geoengineering something.
Mm-hmm.
They say this is significantly higher than the 1,309 the agency reported last Thursday. Professor Robin May, an infectious diseases expert at Birmingham University, told the Mail Online that the outbreak is concerning, definitely. Analysis of figures by Mail Online show the epidemic could strike a further 20,000 people in just a matter of weeks. If current trends continue, this unprecedented outbreak has prompted warnings in 9 nearby countries. So we got that going.
A number of years ago, quite a long time ago, there was a veterinarian up in Montana, I believe, Montana or Wyoming, and birds were just dropping out of the sky, and she got one and did an autopsy and, you know, studied the bird. The bird had H1N1 virus, flu virus, on its wings.
On its wings?
Yeah.
Huh. That's odd.
It must have been raining H1N1 virus.
Isn't that something? Wow.
Yeah. She died, by the way, not long after that, in a car crash on her way to Colorado to a conference.
Wow. Yeah, well, that makes me think about these people, you know, around this Vegas shooting thing. They seem to be dying left and right, although some people that have been reported to be dead haven't even been connected to the... Folks, I want to say this right here and make it very clear. Please don't forward information from yournewswire.com. That is not, in my opinion, a good source of information. Okay? I liken that source to whatdoesitmean.com, which is another one that, in my opinion, make up stories and pass them off as true. So please don't, please, you know, I've seen so many people be deceived by this site, and I'm just begging you to, you know, if they don't cite any sources of information, you know, they may have links in the articles, but if you follow those links and they go to other questionable websites, that means you've got to, because this is what they do. They set up a network. These sites set up a network of similar sites that sound like they could be legitimate sites, but they're and so they can link to each other. So it looks like, oh, look, we're sourcing the information. These are very...
You know what I do with articles like that, Darren, is that I do read them, but I search for confirming information from credible websites.
Yes. Yes, that's what you would do.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people out there. I mean, you know, like even my website, people don't know who I am.
Right.
You know, I could be just...
But you link to original documentation. It's kind of difficult to argue with you when you link to, you know, the State Department, or you link to some UN document. You know, I mean, people can read where you're getting the information from. That's documentation. But
yes.
But
yes,
these things link to
but
other articles.
But I do read a lot of this weird stuff, though. And sometimes I'll pick up a name or a I'll just pick up some piece of information, and I search on that, and it can be very helpful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, not all the time.
Yeah, and
mostly I just research my own stuff, but you know, occasionally something interesting will come along, and I'll take a look at it.
Now we got the Clive and Bundy trial, the trial of the Bundys. Coming up here, it was supposed to, I guess, opening arguments was supposed to have started last Tuesday, but then they got information that evidently the feds have been hiring surveillance, video surveillance, or at least there seems to be some suggestion that there might be some video surveillance of the event that they have not brought to the forefront. Now, of course, you got the Judge Navarro. Who I'd like to call her a misjudge, because she's gutting their ability to make any kind of defense. And I mean, when you're not allowed to talk about property rights, you're not allowed to talk about the reason why you're there, you're not allowed to talk about anything really pertaining to why you did what you did.
Right. Eric Parker was not allowed to talk about the fact that there were snipers there. And that's one of the issues with these videos,
mm-hmm.
tapes that the government says they don't have, but that were taken, is that they would show the snipers.
Yeah. Hey, hang on just a second. Let's pick it up on the other side of the break. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America, 844-646-8376. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's GovernAmerica.com. And Vicki Davis's websites. Go ahead and give your websites out there, Vicki.
It's channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com.
All right. And you want to give your email out, too?
Yeah, it's eyeswideoopen at channelingreality.com.
And my email?
Eyes wide open with two O's. At channelingreality.com.
And my email address is radio@governamerica.com if you'd like to get in touch. We're talking about the situation going on with the Bundys right now, and I think it's obvious the prosecution's going to do the best they can to try to railroad these people into prison. The stakes are very high in this case. They have not done very well, thankfully, at prosecuting the others. And, you know, for them and for the Mal here standoff. So I think they're going to pull out all the stops to try to rig this process, as they have done unsuccessfully in the past. And by the way, if anybody looks at this and sees what the enormous links that the federal government has done to gain convictions of these people, with the whole process being as rigged as it is, the jury was able to see through it and be hung, not follow through with the prosecution.
Hung twice.
That is the power, yes, twice. That is the power of our Constitution. You know, I hear so much, Vicki, from different patriot people who talk about the suspended Constitution. And a lot of people have basically said that it's of no effect at all. And this is why I think we need to look at good and hard and realize why the Constitution needs to be defended. Back when we were talking about the CONCON, which is still a process that's There are still others that are pushing for a constitutional convention. And when we were talking about this, even back when we were on RBN, they were I heard things from the Patriot realm to the effect of, what's the point? The Constitution is already of no effect. And I point to this as evidence that the Constitution very much is in effect. Yes, the federal government is violating it left and right. Yes, they have erected a corporate structure, you know, an extra governmental structure to try to put everybody under corporatism. But the Constitution, the basic foundation, is still there. It's still there waiting for the people to enforce it.
Right. And if you can get to the Supreme Court with a case based on the Constitution, you have a good chance of winning if you have a good case. So, because they still do follow the law, it's just the federal district courts that have gone rogue.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Supreme Court. The problem with the Supreme Court, you know, is that it's basically, I mean, everything that we've had, the victories we've had in recent years have been 5-4 decisions. And you just have to have one more activist judge to flip the court. And I think it's worked to our favor to a certain extent, to, you know, and it's slowed down the other side, and especially with regard to the guns. But you know, if there was no Constitution, if the Constitution was of no effect, then we would not have any gun rights whatsoever at this point in time. Because yep. Throughout the whole Obama administration, all we had were false flags. You know, now we've got another church shooting. We've got another, you know, and there's, I don't like some of the noises that are being made by Republicans about some of the talking about gun control, and we need to have a dialogue, and we can discuss this. No, it's not on the table. You have no right to even consider compromising.
Yeah. Well, name the names of the Republicans who did that, and I'll post a notice on my website that they need to be voted out of office. I really do think that the whole strategy of false flag with gun events is backfiring on them. You can only do that so many times before people, even liberals, you know, say, well, I'm going to get myself a gun. Mm-hmm. Because I've got to protect myself from these crazy Republicans, and vice versa. You know, so I think the strategy of the false flag, it really, they've worn it out, and they've taken away the shock value. And it's in times of shock when people agree to things without necessarily giving it a whole lot of thought.
Yeah, here we see from the Washington Times, Republicans agree to debate gun control after background check system fails. Key senator promises bill focused on background check data.
Who's the key senator?
John Cornyn of Texas, a second-ranking Republican in the Senate, said he would begin drafting a bill to remind government agencies of their duty to provide information to the background check system and would offer incentives to try to earn more cooperation from states. Incentives. In other words, you know, carrots and sticks. We're going to give you money if you comply, and threaten to take away your money if you don't. But here's the thing, people. You can say, well, you know, thankfully they're not coming to get the guns, you know, all at once. No, everything they do is incrementally. Everything they do is chipping away. And this background check system, the whole strategy here, because they can't outright ban guns in America overnight. They've tried that in other places, and it works in other places. We've got a high gun culture because of the Second Amendment, again, because of the Constitution. And people recognizing the importance of that, the Constitution is in their way. And because of that, they have to move incrementally. They have to move more slowly. And so what their strategy here is to keep chipping away, chipping away, chipping away until they got it all. And this is just one step forward for this. I say a top Republican said Tuesday that there is room for a limited gun control debate. Limited. In the wake of this weekend's church shooting, because the massacre has exposed loopholes in the background check system that both parties agree need to be fixed. Now, one thing I wanted to say about this church shooting, too, and I didn't plan on talking about it at this point in the show, but why not? There's some weird stuff going on with this, too. There's a woman that was one of the people that were shot. She was shot in the shoulder, evidently. And one of the media organizations, Telemundo, interviewed her. And she told them, Vicky, that there were shooters on the roof. Now, everything I've seen, this was supposedly a guy that walked in the front door, or, you know, the only door, and started, you know, picking people off. But she was very adamant. In fact, I got the audio. She was very adamant that there was somebody on the roof shooting down at the people.
Well, I heard a gunshot wounds coming from the roof. I just didn't hear them. I saw them. And people went down because we were singing a new song. The two guys at our front and the lady, they got shot. That's when, after the third time that the man went on inside. But first, it started out with
three times? He went in three times?
No, he went in one time. Two times he was on top of the roof where he loaded his gun up there. His shotgun, he loaded it two times. When he got done with that, on top of the roof at the church, he was on top. He was shooting down. That's why I got shot back here, because I was laying like this. He was shooting the shots down on the floor in the church. And the kids were all scattered on the bottom of the benches.
Are you sure he was on the roof?
He was on the roof. He was on the roof. He was shooting from up. He was on the roof.
Now notice the reporter is incredulous. She can't believe this. And she says, are you sure? Are you sure you saw what you saw?
Are you sure he was on the roof?
He was on the roof. He was on the roof. He was shooting from up. He was on the roof. Me and him, we know he was on the roof. The shots were coming from on top of the roof. They were not coming from anywhere else. He has to be on top. If you can see the shots coming to the floor, he's got to be on top of you. And I could see the bullets flying like that, hitting the ground. I could see, you know, the shots. You can see when they split the wood or the carpet. You could see them going like that, you know, all over. I could feel them, you know, pass right by my ear. And he wouldn't stop. He would not stop. It went on for about 10 minutes. And he stopped, and everybody thought, it's going to be okay. Everybody's going to be okay. And then he started again. He reloaded the shotgun up there, reloaded the shotgun, and started shooting again. And there was no police, nobody around. Nobody could hear us. Nobody saw what was going on. Nobody saw him on top of the roof.
What do you think of that?
What, do you know where the church is? I don't know where the church is relative to everything else that was going on, but I've been kind of anxious for this new information to come out about the war between these two Saudi princes, one of them that owns the top floor, four floors at the Mandalay Bay, and the other one that was the target of an assassination attempt. He was staying at the Tropicana. And what I got out of one of the interviews was that they were shooting at the people at the festival really to create chaos, you know, to have the police running here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. While the assassination attempt was going on at the Tropicana.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm
waiting. I don't have a lot of information on that. I've just heard little bits and pieces, you know, David Knight talking about it. And
Yeah,
I know. I've read a few things. But the guy Talil, he apparently is the one that is invested in Las Vegas in MGM properties. He's the one that has the Dubai interests.
Yeah, you know, talking about this church shooting for just a minute, finishing up with that, I don't know why, you know, this woman's experience is her own. You know, I presume she knows what she's talking about since she was there.
Except that she said a shotgun. Why would she say
well,
a shotgun?
Well, she's probably not, she probably has nothing to do with guns. You know, I mean, it's, for her, she just... I'm sure she probably doesn't even think about what types of weapons are used and that sort of thing. She's just a typical, everyday, average person who probably doesn't do any shooting. But the point is that I don't know. She said she saw them on the roof. And I think it's important to pay attention to what eyewitnesses say. You know, the media likes to discount eyewitnesses and say that their testimony is notoriously unreliable, but the media is trying to steer a certain narrative, you know, and I reference again the footage in the aftermath of any event where you have the media arguing with eyewitnesses. Oh, you didn't really see that. No, the police say this. And so, so I wonder why they even talked to them. But this woman was evidently there. And she said she saw them on the roof, and she saw them shooting. Now, I don't know if they were shooting through the roof. They started off shooting through the roof. I don't know.
She wouldn't be able to see them if that were true.
Well, unless they made a hole in the roof, and they were shooting through the roof and made a hole in the roof. I don't know. I'm just going on her testimony there. But if there really were shooters on the roof, then they wouldn't, presumably there's some damage to the roof.
I need to see where the church is relative to all of the other buildings that were involved, because I don't recall, I do recall the mention of a church, but I don't know where it is relative to everything else.
Where it is, you mean
because
geographically?
Because that would make a big difference as far as I'm concerned.
Are you talking geographically? You don't know where it is?
Where the church is, and then and no, I don't.
Sutherland, I think it's Sutherland Springs, Texas. Yeah, it's First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs.
Oh, you're talking about that church.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Back up. Forget everything I said.
Well, you thought that
never
I was talking
mind.
About. All right. Well, you know, they say 26 people were killed, 20 wounded. You know, and the thing that bothers me about this woman's testimony, aside from the fact that it contradicts the official narrative, and other people have said that she could be in danger, and I agree with that. If in fact things are the way she says they are, that I would say she is in a tremendous. I'd say all the survivors would be in danger.
Yeah. Did you hear the report on that guy's background? How he was always psychotic. And he went into the Air Force. They let him escape from a mental hospital, and they didn't report it. You see, that is the big tell, that he was a wind-up toy.
Mind control, MK Ultra.
Yes, because they don't just let you walk away from a locked mental facility. They put out like all points bulletins as if you're a criminal with a weapon.
Good point. Absolutely. Yeah, so that's, you know, that smells. And what bothers me here, and the pastor's daughter, I guess, was shot. But if, in fact, there were shooters up on the roof, then conceivably, I would think that the church was damaged. There would be evidence of, you know, bullet holes through the roof or something. But yet, the pastor of the church is talking about it not being, it won't be reopened, and there is talk of demolishing the church, which bothers me.
It would be easy for somebody to go take pictures of the church.
Well, you can't get to it, though. I mean, if it's a crime scene, they have it roped off.
Yeah, but you know, with a telephoto lens, you can take pictures from quite a far distance.
Well, the only way you could do it is if you've flown in a helicopter above the church and used a telephoto lens. And how many people have that ability? I mean, certainly a news station could probably do that. And I talked to Steve O'Brien. He called me the other day, and he said that he drove down there, and he says that... I mean, the scene was absolutely chaos. He says, I counted 50 satellite trucks down there. Apparently, there's news organizations from all over the world that have descended on it, which I guess would make sense. But it would be interesting to have somebody fly over this thing.
Why would it make sense? He's just one crazy guy that shot up a church.
Well, the media's fascination with anything having to do with making guns look bad.
Well, I suppose that's true, but I don't know. That seems they did the same thing at Malheur Refuge, by the way.
Yes, they did.
There was so much media there, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable and unnecessary, but and what's funny is they come, they make it seem like they're on your side. They pal around with you to try to get you to open up to them, and then as soon as they go back, they stab you in the back.
Yeah, well, the media they're propagandists. I mean, I don't think we actually have news anymore because the media is part of the whole globalization scheme.
Yeah, we are the media. We are the media.
Ideas and perceptions of people along the planned path. And part of the planned path is, of course, disarmament, total and complete.
Yeah, we are the free and open media. And if the other side gets their way at shutting us up and people like us, then they will successfully achieve... having basically a state-run media, even though it's on paper it's not, it might as well be because the end result is the same. You know, and you've got the big platforms, the social media platforms trying to, you know, censoring people left and right, and more calls for more censorship. Al Frankenstein is out there making calls now in editorials, pushing for almost threatening the big three, I guess you'd say, for lack of a better way of saying it, Facebook, Google, and Twitter.
Yeah, well, and
if they don't censor
there was
people.
An implied threat by one of the senators. He said to the three executives, "You do better when we do better." And when he said that, I realized that what those politicians are really afraid of is that people are going to focus on them and their careers, and their careers will be over if you get a group of people that are focused on one senator or one representative looking into all of his business dealings, his filings, his trips, everything about him, and you expose that, you know, if there's any hint of corruption, you know, it could end the career of the politicians. And I realize that that's really what they're afraid of.
Yeah.
Is that this new media will be turned on them.
One other thing that I want to talk about with regard to false flags here, because, you know, the Vegas thing, I think I don't want to talk it to death here, but I do say that we do need to kind of not forget about that whole thing, because it's real easy with other things happening for this to continue. But there's still other oddities that have happened that are taking place. In fact, one of the things that I found rather disturbing, and I mentioned people dying left and right with regard to this, there was a couple who survived. Daily Mail was reporting on October 30th. Married California couple who survived the Vegas massacre die in a fiery car crash just a half a mile from their home. Their names are Dennis and Lorraine Carver. They died when their car crashed into a metal gate. The husband and wife had survived the Vegas shooting that killed 59 people. Mr. Carver said, is said to have jumped on top of his wife to shield her from the bullets. They escaped uninjured. Okay, so anyway, it's got a picture of them here. Car crashes are very convenient ways of assassinating people today. I hate to say it. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I don't know. But I just think it's bothersome to me when I start seeing people drop dead after one of these events.
Did you find any interviews that they did or he did?
No, unfortunately,
Because usually the people that die are people that saw something and are speaking out.
Well, everybody there would have seen it, would have seen things.
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, in a chaotic situation like that, I'm not sure that you would.
Well, I'll tell you what. I got a couple of sound bites to play here. Let me do this after the top of the hour break, because this is, I think it's important. It's very important to explore these things when they happen.
By the way, move up everything that I said previously. Move it up to this conversation about the war between the princes.
The war between the princes. All right. Hour number two of Govern America straight ahead, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay with us. This is Govern America.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is the second hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you, as we are every Saturday. And it's good to have you with us. We hope you'll spread the word about the broadcast. We appreciate all the stations and networks that carry the show. Greetings to the folks at UCY.TV. Greetings to the folks at the American Voice Radio Network, carrying us via satellite and their streams. And all the folks over at Liberty News Radio and Liberty Radio and the various other outlets that pick us up all across the country. And the folks around the world listening to us, we appreciate all that you do to further the message of liberty. And in the meantime, we've been talking about the situation going on, or has been going on, in Vegas and the situation in Texas with all these false flags. Of course, we had another New York incident with the car running over people, or was it? It was a truck, wasn't it?
He drove down a bicycle path.
Yeah, that's right. So many of these things, it's insane. It's insane how many of these things are going on, and it's hard to keep track of them. You barely have a chance to investigate one, and another one happens. And you know what's interesting?
It's the battle of ideas and systems and ideas. It goes back to the open cities idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also open borders, because under a global system of governance, we're all the same, right? We're all the same people.
Well, that's what they'd like us to believe. The reality, of course, is we're very different.
That's why they're saying we just have to get used to these kinds of things happening.
You know, it's almost like you read my mind, because that's exactly what I was about to say here next, is mm-hmm. The worrying thing about this New York incident, aside from the fact that people died, and I do believe people died, is that they came out in the media and very prominently said that this is the new norm. And that's exactly the terminology they used. In fact, I had the, I wish I'd clipped it now. On the BBC, I actually have the audio of them saying that. It was the BBC World News America, which I despise the BBC. But they come out and said, you know, this is the new norm. In other words, like you just said, Vicky, we got to get used to having our people picked off by these Islamist terrorists.
Uh-huh. Okay, in Gorbachev's speech, he addresses that. He says, as the world asserts its diversity, attempts to look down on others and to teach them one's own brand of democracy becomes totally improper, to say nothing of the fact that democratic values intended for export often very quickly lose their worth. What we are talking about, therefore, is unity in diversity.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a world without borders to me.
Yeah. You know, well, and that's supposed to strengthen the unity of the world. If we just open ourselves up totally and allow all kinds of psychopaths and barbarians and monsters to come into our society, we will learn to live in diversity.
Yeah, well, I'm having a little struggle with that.
Yeah, and after a mass murder event,
yeah, one
we can
right
just
after
go
another.
Shopping.
Yeah, go shopping, you consumer, you. Uh-huh. Now, I've talked about, you know, I'm a fan of Tucker Carlson. I gotta say, I don't have a whole lot of praise for the mainstream media, but Tucker, I don't think he's going to be at Fox very long because he's kind of breaking rules that we've always traditionally accepted as being well-established things you can't do on mainstream media. One of the things that he's brought out a number of times is the psychotropic drug connection with a lot of these shootings, and that goes against the potential advertising revenue for the network, and that's one aspect of it. He's also been hammering this Las Vegas shooting incident and asking questions, and he interviewed an attorney for the family members of the victims. Now, during that interview, the attorney dropped a huge bombshell.
Craig Island is a lawyer representing several of the victims of the Vegas attack, and he joins us tonight. Craig, thanks for coming on. You're, I think, one of the few people who's been to the scene of the crime.
Yes, sir.
And did anything useful come out of that? Did you learn anything?
We learned several things. Number one, we do know that the FBI has taken all of the bullet marks and all of the bullet holes and assumed all the bullets. Another thing that was interesting is that all of our clients were telling us that on the night of the shooting that there was nowhere to go. Now, come on, we can see that there's exits in the plans and the maps. And then when you're actually there, you can see that most of the exits were blocked. Many of the exits were behind fences. And there was only really two places in which to escape. And that's very concerning, especially when people got hit and killed 10 minutes after the shooting started.
So they were kind of like, that wasn't the bombshell. We're going to get to that in a minute. But I thought that that was relevant to talk about because they're saying the same thing about this latest church shooting incident in Texas. That the shooter came in the front door, the only door, and there was no place for anybody to go. So why would you have a situation at a concert venue where all of the exits, save one or two, are blocked?
You shouldn't, because that's one of the most important things. When the building permit is issued, they inspect the plans, and in your design of your building, you have to have a certain number of exits, and they have to be unblocked. You know, they have to have access for emergency exits, And they won't issue a building permit unless you have the right number of exits for the amount of people.
For this very purpose, for this very reason. If there's some emergency that breaks out, people have to be able to get out.
Yes.
But in this case,
you can't funnel everybody through one doorway or two doorways, especially a situation like that concert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would seem like you would need a lot of exit.
Yeah,
exits at every corner.
But they had the gates blocked, evidently, according to what is being said by people, you know, the witnesses on the ground, and also the attorney for the victims, for the family of the victims.
Is there any indication, or have you received any, seen any evidence that the FBI had knowledge of Stephen Paddock, anything about Stephen Paddock before this happened?
Well, not yet, because we don't have anything released from the FBI or other law enforcement agencies. I do think that after 30 days, we ought to be having more information than we have right now. For example, we know bits and pieces. We know that he arrived with 10 bags. We know that two bellmen helped him carry those bags up. Then we find out that those 10 bags had guns in them, 5,000 rounds of ammunition. We know that MGM claims to have a if you see something, say something policy. And you're telling us that nobody saw those guns over a five-day period? No maid, no housekeeping, no food service ever saw any of the guns?
Nobody
saw him using power drills in the hallway. Nobody saw him setting up security cameras. These are all things that need to be answered. I know you've asked the same questions, and so are we.
Some of them, I hadn't even asked some of those questions. How did he get access to the service elevator if, in fact, he used it? Do you know?
We don't know. We know. We've heard two separate things. One, that he asked to use it, so they let him. And two, that since he was a VIP and part of the M-Life program, that he was allowed to have access to the service elevator. Either one, or either way, it's concerning.
Have you been able to speak to Jesus Campos?
No. Neither have you.
No. And it's our impression just from watching that MGM has kept pretty tight management of the things that he says in public. Why would you think that would be the case?
Maybe they're concerned of what he's going to say. Maybe they're concerned he's not going to stick with the MGM story. But eventually, he will be examined under oath.
Okay, now listen to what this guy says here. Now we're getting to the part why I really wanted to play this.
But eventually, he will be examined under oath by attorneys in these cases. And so it's going to be important to know the timeline from what he says and from what the other two. Now we know that there was two other police officers on the floor with him prior to the shooting. Those are all questions that have to be answered, and they eventually will, unfortunately.
What is it, police officers or MGM security guards?
As of yesterday, it was that two, we knew about Campos, but that there was two other police officers from the MGM that were on the floor prior to the shooting. But that's part of the ever-changing timeline.
So, but just to be clear, not Las Vegas Police Department, but MGM employees acting as security.
No, there is a report yesterday that there were two off-duty officers floor that responded to Campos prior to the shooting beginning.
Huh. This is getting more confusing by the day. Craig, thank you for this. I appreciate it.
What do you think of that?
Well, I'd say that's very interesting. I wonder if they were working for on scene at the time.
No, he said police officers. He didn't say...
Well, yes, but he said that they were off-duty.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Uh-huh. Hmm. So, that would be the question.
Yeah, because Tucker...
Were on duty with on scene at the time.
Yeah, that would be a question. And it's there's so many things about this thing, and I don't want to belabor the point, but when you got the sheriff out there, and he's talking about, and I wish I had the audio, I didn't clip the audio from this, but he's holding press conferences, and he says, I'm going to give you the narrative. And he uses that word. Did you notice that? He says, I'm going to give you the narrative, or I'm going to read you the narrative. I mean, come on, man.
Well, with
and then they're
the way
prompting
that,
him.
That FBI agent glares.
Yeah,
I imagine you'd probably want to just, you know, read whatever he gave you.
Yeah, and you got the situation where he's being prompted from behind. There was a question from a reporter. I do have the audio from this question from the reporter asking him about the. You remember the car that was loaded with explosives, or the van, or whatever it was, loaded with explosives.
I don't.
Yeah, that was one of the things that came out relatively early in the narrative, is that the paddock had a vehicle that was loaded with explosives down there in the parking lot, I guess.
And holy cow! No, I didn't. I completely.
Well, that's because they quit talking about it. But what's interesting here is that the reporter's asking some kind of question about that, and they shut the police. They basically said, "Don't go there."
Car was planned for intercept.
Okay. I'm sorry?
Was the car planned for intercept? So there might have been evidence.
Don't ask me to make assumptions, please.
Okay, now listen. Now, let me play that again. In fact, if you notice, you got to really listen for it. Because somebody whispers to the sheriff, don't go there. Don't go there.
I hope you have a link for this because I
yes
now
everything
I'm
we
very
talk about
intrigued.
Everything we talk about is in the show notes or will be
awesome. Okay.
So listen to this carefully. When he asks a question, you hear somebody clear their throat. That is the guy. That is the I believe the county commissioner. Okay, he clears his throat and then he whispers. You know, he clears his throat to get the sheriff's attention and then he whispers, "Don't go there." Listen carefully.
Car was planned for him.
Did you hear it? I'll play it again. Here it is.
Oh yeah, don't go there. I heard that.
Don't go there. Why?
Uh-huh.
Why? Why not go there?
Really,
why not go there?
That was a county commissioner. What is a county commissioner doing involved in all of this? He shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
It's police business.
One of the many mysteries about this whole ordeal.
Yeah, well, county commissioners are in this corruption up to their eyeballs.
Yeah, and apparently, obviously, the FBI is as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, they are.
Because it seems very apparent that this is not an investigation where the truth is supposed to come out. So many things about this, ever-changing timeline. I mean, from beginning to the end, they can't pull one of these things off and do it cleanly. They're not very good. You think with all the practice they've had, they'd be good at it, but they always make mistakes. We got a phone call on the line. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Pastor Dan. I'm listening via Eurofolk Radio as a simulcast. And
oh, okay.
I just wanted to say you guys are doing a great job, but I wanted to read some quotes of Henry Kissinger, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think because these are appropriate. Now, these are, again, quotes of Mr. Henry Hines, the Khazar Zionist Kissinger.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a matter of what is true that counts, but a matter of what is perceived to be true. That's one. Second, the illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer.
There you go.
But the third quote is from his addressing his fellow world globalists in 1991. Now just think about this, 1991. This is just prior to all the stuff kicking off with Randy Weaver in 1992. But this is in Evian's, France, talking to his fellow globalists, typically Zionist communist.
Mm-hmm.
Today, America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. when presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government.
Yep. And how many years ago he said that? And we can see we're on the threshold.
A key year between the years of 1989 when the Berlin Wall came down and 1992, you know, when they did that Rio conference. That's a very pivotal time in world history. And I've traced everything back. It all started, the whole New World Order started with the end of the Cold War. So we went from the Cold War to permanent war.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, Vicki, you know, I had a very erudite friend of mine tell me right after the wall came down, he and I were discussing it, and everybody, of course, was cheering it, but he said, "Why do you think the wall came down, Dan?" And I said, "Well, because they defeated him." He goes, "No, the wall came down because there was no longer a need. The same people were controlling on both sides of the wall."
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. The way I looked at it is that it wasn't communists rushing for the free world. It was communists rushing. Well, it is rushing the free world to turn us all communist.
Right. And my interviews with General Ben Parton from Virginia years ago, that was his major concern back in the 1990s, was everybody was focusing on all these, quote, events. But what they were not looking at was the fact that the Third Communist International was alive and well, and they have never given up on their plan for world domination.
Well, Carol Browner, who was the EPA administrator, she was a socialist. She was a member of the Socialist International. I think Bill Clinton just basically surrendered our country to the Socialist International. Maybe it actually was before that. Maybe it was George Herbert Walker Bush. But anyway, yeah, we are fighting communism. We are fighting the communist war. It's just that the nation states, which goes back to what Gorbachev said, the nation states have agreed to stay out of it and allow the war to be fought on civilian turf by civilians.
Yep.
Right.
So. Exactly. Well,
and we can't we can't ignore the protocols of the learned elders of Zion in all of this, and the Zionist goal of world dominance. This all plays into it. Henry Ford talked about it. And used to put a copy of the International Jew on the front seat of every Ford that came out of Detroit, trying to wake people up to this conspiracy, because there is a conspiracy by these people.
Yeah, this is why the Middle East has been destabilized, and ultimately the plan is to take over everything.
Yes, I absolutely agree. It is a conspiracy. It's out in the open, but people are living with a normalcy bias.
Yes,
and so they whether they see any parts of it, they choose not to digest it, I guess.
Yeah,
but that's what I try to do, is to get people to take a look at these things and to understand what it means beyond the moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
These people have been working on this plan for over 100 years. All the documentation is out there. All you have to do is follow the history.
Now, many would say it goes back generations and generations.
Well, it may go back beyond that, but I mean, I can prove.
Yeah, ultimately you could take it back to the Garden of Eden, couldn't you?
Well, but I only go back as far as I can prove, so.
Yeah.
Which is far enough. I mean, that's all you have to do is prove from one point in history follow back in time and then go forward to where we are now, and it's indisputable.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know how anybody can have their head in the sand these days. I think a lot of people have awakened because they can see it now. I mean, I remember, Dan, I don't know about you, but I remember back in the day when I first started paying attention, and, you know, I got awakened by a satellite feed at a TV station where I worked, and I started realizing that these people in these Patriot broadcasting realm, you know, the Patriot radio, these people have the information that I knew instinctively was true based upon what I'm seeing in society. You know, you had Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and he was talking America up, talking about all the good things, you know, and quoting Reagan about this, you know, shining city on the hill and all this stuff. And I'm looking around in society, and I'm seeing devastation. I'm seeing economic decline, and I'm seeing all of these things that people are suffering. I knew that what I'm seeing is not true. And then I stumble across Patriot Radio, and I realize these are the people that, this is the information I have not been getting from the mainstream media. But you go around and try to talk to people, try to share that message with other people, and they say, that doesn't affect me, you know. And what's most painful, what's most painful about it is when it's your loved one. People that are closest to you tell you things like this. Well, you're into all that, and then, you know, I just don't, yeah, that doesn't affect me, you know, my everyday life. And so I start pointing it out, you know, that things that happen to them. And I say, see, it does affect you. Do you see how it affects you? And over time, you keep planting these seeds until they start to realize, wait a minute, maybe this is affecting me. And I think that's part of the reason why the other side has a big problem now. They have to create so much chaos in society now because they've got so many people that are awakened to what these little rascals have been up to, that putting the genie in the box, back in the bottle, is impossible. We have a whole generation of people now that have awakened. So they have to create the divide and conquer strategy to blur who the real enemy really is. We're not, you know, to try to make it to where everybody's at each other's throat. And, you know, I think we'll be doing very well if we don't have a civil war in our country. We need to try to figure out a way to reach the other side and to try to convey a message. It's gotten so bad. I was approached the other day at the Secretary of State office, and some guy came up to me. He was a black gentleman, and he just started spewing all this hatred toward Trump. And, you know, and I told him, look, I'm not a defender of Trump. And what was odd is he walked in from outside, almost like he was on a mission, walked right up to me, almost like he knew who I was, and he starts talking about all this stuff.
That's very scary, Darren.
It was bizarre. And then he said
exactly.
And I said, well, look, you know, and I knew I'm not going to change this guy's mind. You know, the Bible says you don't cast your pearls before the swine. And I'm not saying the guy was swine, but I'm just, there's a principle here. You don't, if you know you're not going to have any effect trying to sway somebody because they're so steeped in their ideology, all you can do is try to plant a seed here or there. But this guy, he says, you know, that he's going on about, you know, Trump grabbing women, and, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, but it's okay for Bill Clinton to do it, you know, and he's going on about the collusion with the Russians, and then he almost anticipating what the counter argument might be, that, you know, he says you can't, he says the uranium one thing, the deal with Russia, he says that's beyond the statute of limitations, blah blah blah, or whatever. And I says, oh, okay, but it was okay,
yeah, that
then.
Makes sense.
It was okay,
right?
Then.
No, I don't think there's a statute of limitations on treason.
And then he says something about he gave it away. He says he went to he says he knew. He says I know Jeremiah Wright. And I thought, well, that's, I said, you do? I says, really? And yeah. And so it was very bizarre because the conversation had started off about how crowded the place was and how many offices the Secretary of State had closed down here in Michigan. After he's done talking to me, I'm not kidding you, he walks right back out to outside. He leaves. So he came in, sat down, talked to me, and then he left.
That scares me, Darren.
It's weird.
That scares me. That almost... that's not a normal kind of encounter you have with people.
Yeah.
He sought you out.
Yeah, maybe. I tell you what, we're at the bottom.
I hope
of the...
you carry.
Yeah. Yeah, we're at the bottom of the hour right now. Hey, Pastor Dan, thanks for calling in there. Hope you'll call back.
Yep.
God bless.
You guys take care. Keep up the good work, and Yahweh bless.
All right. Blessings to you, too, as well. All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take the break.
Beginning of the United States.
We'll be back. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. The website for the radio broadcast is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com, and you can get to Vicky's website from there, channelingreality.com, and the technocratictyranny.com. Make sure you put the in there, thetechnocratictyranny.com, place where you can get all of our research. I'm looking at the Americans for Tax Reform website right now, and they have done an analysis on the current Republican proposal for revamping the tax system. And I got to tell you, folks, this is not a tax decrease, at least not as far as I'm able to decipher this. This looks very much like a tax increase for much of America, which I guess we shouldn't be surprised.
It's in large part a tax shift. You know, reducing corporate tax burdens and tax burdens on the wealthy and shifting it onto the middle and lower classes.
Yeah. Well, I think that would be a good good way of describing it. However, those people who are, you know, the big thing here with me, I think, is the fact that they're doing away with your ability to deduct your state and local taxes off your federal tax return.
Yeah, and your property taxes.
Yeah, your
that's
yep.
huge. That is huge for most people.
And for and mortgages, too. Now, the, the mortgages that are existing, I guess, are grandfathered in the House bill. And the other problem here that I see is under the guise of simplifying the tax, you know, here's the, here's the thing about it. Simplification is not necessarily a good thing. When you're simplifying things, I guess the simplest thing is just to give all your money to the government. That would be very simple, wouldn't it?
Well, and you know what it does? It means that people won't actually read the tax code anymore. At least a lot of people now do read the tax code to some extent to find out
what the law is.
But they can't take.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, if they simplify it so that you don't even look at the tax code, then, you know, basically it's just a blank check for the government.
Well, what they've done here is they've simplified things by eliminating the deductions. I mean, that makes it very simple. They've,
right.
they've gone from seven brackets down to four in the House bill. Now, the Senate bill maintains the seven brackets, and it does reduce the percentages. However, when you factor in the fact that you can't deduct your state and local taxes from the federal taxes anymore, that is an increase. Because those things, they basically are doing away with everything, that every deduction, except for charitable giving. You know, you can still give to the various foundations that are working for our demise, and you can still
get... That's the one deduction they need to eliminate totally.
But these are your Republicans, folks. These are your Republicans that are working in your benefit, right? These are the people that are supposedly on your side. And I don't see any. In fact, I've got an interactive map here that I will put in the link in the show notes, which talks about how you know, the areas that are hardest hit in the country with regard to average dollars that are spent in state and local government. And there's, of course, the big population centers, and they're talking about how Trump's sticking it to these big cities. But it's not Trump doing this. This, you know, Trump will sign it. I guarantee you he'll sign it, because he'll sign anything they send him that has tax relief written on it. Now, they could talk about tax relief and, you know, tax deductions and simplifying. You know, they use these talking points, and there's a few Easter eggs in this thing so that they can use to sell it. And that's the way they do with this legislation. They always put little things in there that they can point to and say, see, this is good. This is good. We're doing this for you. But really what they're doing it is they're doing it to you. They're stabbing you in the back. They're bending you over. And will some people benefit off of this thing? You bet. So there will be some people. Predominantly, people that I would describe as the working poor. The working poor might benefit a little bit. You know, people who have the minimum wage jobs and that sort of thing, they probably benefit. But the biggest beneficiary of this will be, as Vicky pointed out, the wealthiest of the wealthy. And that's just the way it is, folks. If the Democrats were doing it, it'd be pretty much the same way.
You know what? I think everything that they're doing, all of the policies that they're implementing, is to manage the decline of the United States. I watched the hearing on the H-2C visa program for laborers, and I don't remember if I talked about this or not. I don't think so. The last time we were on, but this new guest worker program, it's not only for agricultural workers, it's also for meat packers, for fish processors, for people that work in food processing, and in forestry jobs. Mm-hmm. Those are good jobs, the forestry jobs. And so was the meat processing and packing. But what they're going to be doing if this legislation passes is that they'll be issuing over 400,000 visas annually for workers in these fields, in these career paths or jobs. But it's the associations that will be importing the workers. The workers will not be tied to an employer, so they can take at-will work. But the imported worker will have to pay for all of the expenses that an employer comes up with for them to pay, like the transportation fees, the employment and visa processing fees, any tools that are required, tools, uniforms, housing, transportation, anything. They all have to pay for that themselves, and the federal fair minimum wage law doesn't apply. So basically, they can import slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that what they're doing really is managing the decline of the American standard of living.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And they are trying to balance the global price of labor.
Yeah.
Trying to bring Americans down to the global price of labor so that people are interchangeable.
Yeah, they're lowering the corporate tax rate. By the way, we had a caller on the line, and I just was ready to hit the button when you disappeared on me. So call back, and I will take your call. But anyhow, the everything is being done for the major corporations, and this thing they say in here the 12% bracket Now, the seven brackets, as I mentioned, go to four, 12%, 25%, 35%, and 39.6%. So if you make income up to $45,000, $90,000 for married couples, you're in the 12% bracket. If you make $1 more, you jump up from the 12% bracket to 25% bracket. So the increments are just astronomical.
I think they do give people an opportunity to shelter some income by putting their money into specialized accounts, right? Like the health savings account, like an education account for their children, which is really the Congress micromanaging people's money.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The 25% bracket applies to income between $45,000, $1, and $200,000, $90,000, and $260,000 for married couples. The 35% bracket applies to income between $200,000 and $1 to a half a million, $260,000 and $1, and $1 million for married couples. That's the 35%.
You know what, Darren? Hmm. Why would a person ever strive to achieve a higher status in life if your tax bracket jumps from 12% to 25% if you get a raise?
You wouldn't.
Yeah. So
it disincentivizes. Unless you can achieve the higher end of that tax bracket, which, good luck with that.
Well, you know what? That goes along with the design of the economy that I saw in a report by the National Center for Education and the Economy. And I forget what year it was published, but I wrote a report on that on my old website. It's called D-Day in America. And the name of the report was Tough Choices or Tough Times.
Mm-hmm.
And they, on page 8 of that report, there is a graphic that shows the plan for the U.S. economy. And it is a highly stratified economy. They planned on the United States being international division of labor. They planned on the United States being the location for high-end work, research and development, and, quote, innovation, their favorite word, innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And the menial-type work being distributed around the world, which is why they exported the manufacturing jobs over to China.
Yep.
Because in the International Division of Labor, they decided that China was the place where manufacturing would be done.
Yeah, as they said, China is our future.
Yeah, well, but what that means is that the vast majority of American children will have no chance in life unless they are absolute world-class geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people do you know that has a child that is a world-class genius?
Well, in this day and age, the number's becoming less and less all the time.
Right, because they've converted the schools to be vocational training.
Well, and
it's
you can't do anything in the schools unless you do it
training.
As a group. Everything is about groups now. Children
right,
learn in groups.
They don't want the children to learn to think on their own because
that's
they
right.
might figure out how this whole system is being engineered to cheat them out of a life.
It is the communitarian education system.
Yes.
You have to learn as a communitarian. You have to learn. You work together to come out with some kind of solution. And never mind
accept
the fact.
Accept your status in life as a serf.
Yeah. Well, accept your status in life as a part of the Borg, as a part of the collective.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And the majority of American children will be assigned to low-level jobs, and they are giving them training commensurate with the low-level status that they will be expected to fill.
Yeah. So I mentioned the 12%, the 25%, the 35%, and the 39.6% bracket applies to income above $500,000, $1 million for married couples. So these are the new brackets according to the, I believe this would be the House bill, and the Senate bill is, I think, a little better than the House bill. However, both bills eliminate the deduction. What they call the SALT, the state and local tax deduction for your government, your federal government income taxes. So this is an increase for many people.
Hopefully the liberal states will prevent that from happening because the states like New York, California, Illinois, it's really going to hurt them.
Yeah, and this is why I'm going to post the county map. Which is, you know, you can hover over this thing and it'll tell you exactly what those amounts are. And it has the areas where you're hardest, the people that are going to be hardest hit. But I don't care if you're hardest hit or not. And folks, here's the thing. We should know that Congress never does anything to solve any problems. Government is the problem. Government always has been the problem. And anytime you hear a politician talking about how they're going to do you a favor and revamp the tax system, you better grab your wallet, you know, and hold on tight. Or you just bend over and get ready because it's coming.
Yeah. Dig a hole in your backyard and, you know, put your money in a box in your backyard because they're coming for it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and then of course, there's nothing here anywhere about how the government is going to quit spending your money, quit spending you blind. Here we see from CNS News, GOP Congress presides over highest spending. No, hold on a second. This headline must be an error, Vicky. It says GOP Congress. GOP Congress presides over highest spending since Obama's stimulus. I thought the Republicans were not tax and spend. Didn't we hear
Darren,
from all the conservatives?
It costs a lot of money to rebuild the world.
Well, it costs a lot of money to engage in all these perks. It costs a lot of money to, yes, rebuild. Well, how about destroy?
Yeah, and I do mean the world. I don't mean the United States.
The military
I do mean the world.
Industrial complex costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say real federal spending in fiscal 2017, which ended on September 30th, was higher than in any year in the history of the United States, other than fiscal 2009, which was the year that Obama, his $840 billion stimulus law was enacted. Fiscal 2017 also saw the highest, second highest, real federal individual income tax totals of any year in U.S. history, according to the monthly Treasury statement released on October 20th. The total federal tax revenues were the third highest in U.S. history. While it was collecting the third highest total tax revenues in U.S. history, the federal government ran a deficit of $666 billion. Listeners, round it up. $665,712,000,000. So, rounded up, it's 666, which is very appropriate.
Can't be a mistake. That
no,
cannot
I don't
be
think
a,
it's
mistake.
A mistake at all.
They did that on purpose.
Well, everything
you know
they
what?
Do is on purpose.
I've actually decided that it's the Republicans that are the Marxists, and the Democrats are just dumb stooges.
No, I think they're all the same. They're all the same. This back and forth, Republican, Democrat, they're all playing for the same team. And people need to realize, you know, oh, I talk to people and I hear them say, oh, my party isn't doing what I want them to do. My party. No, you don't have a party. And I keep trying to get this through to them. You don't have a party. They're having the party. You're not invited to the party. But you get to pay for the party.
That's true. And when I was watching that hearing on the visas, and our member of the House, Raul Labrador, is on that committee, and he supports that H-2C visa mm-hmm. program, and he's running for governor here in Idaho. And I do intend to write an article about that. He's not getting away with this one, even though all my friends, everybody I know, they're all conservatives, and I'm sure that they will be supporting Raul Labrador, but I'm not. And the way that it works is that the Democrats support the visas for the high-end work, the white-collar work, and the while they defend, you know, low.
While they defend
Republicans,
what?
Reverse that situation. So they really just tag team the guest worker visas to do exactly what I said, which is to manage the decline in standard of living for the American people to the global price of labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Race to the bottom.
Well, we're all becoming slaves. It's very apparent to that. And of course, now we have corporate slave camps, which exist inside America. Earlier this week, on November 1st, to be exact, I posted on the website an article, and I sent you this article. The title of the original article is, they thought they were going to rehab, they ended up in chicken plants. This is a little thing that was published by Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, which is a nonprofit organization which was based in San Francisco Bay Area. They did an investigation here, and people, you need to read this article if you haven't. This is talks about how these people were increasingly in America. You have judges that are sending people off to what amounts to slave camps. Now, they don't call them slave camps. In fact, this particular one is called CARE. And the idea is that, well, the supposed idea was that they learn to a work ethic. But what it really boils down to, there's no, you know, the idea is that if you're on drugs or something, that you go there and you you work and then you learn a work ethic, and you know, somehow you come out the other side rehabilitated, having learned a work ethic, and then maybe you can function in society after getting clean. But what it really is about working people as slaves, not giving them anything. And they talk in here about the how people are injured, and they're being forced to work injured. And if they don't, you know, the whole time that they're working, if they get injured or if they don't work hard enough, according to the people who are supervising them, they're constantly threatened with going to major prison, to ordinary standard prison. Most of these people are grateful to be sentenced to this prison work camp because they think, well, anything's better than prison. And then they get in there into deplorable work conditions. They're worked very hard, without any incentive, and in many cases end up injured, and then if they end up injured to the point where they can't work or something, then they still find themselves in prison.
Yeah, this is the system of drug courts that is doing this primarily, and the drug courts, they call it a diversion program. Well, mm-hmm. the diversion is to a slave labor job, and that again it is to manage the decline of American wages.
Mm-hmm.
They started this when they privatized the prisons and they started up prison industries. Now, initially, the jobs for prison industries were things like building government office furniture and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They've expanded like every other industry. They have expanded, and they have this need for free labor to compete with the global price of labor.
Yeah, and the problem here, of course, is, and you just hit on it right there, it competes with private industry. It is a government program competing with private industry, which puts people out of the jobs at a time when people need employment more than ever before. But when they can work you under the threat of imprisonment if you don't work in a manner in which they want you to work, how is that any different from going over to communist China or any other dictatorial regime and having a gun to your head and taking you out and harvesting your organs when you don't perform in the manner in which they want you to perform?
Yeah, it's not at all different. Not in any way different. The fact that it's occurring in this country makes no difference whatsoever.
It's alarming.
Slave labor is slave labor. Period.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, I think this is going to be, they're talking about doing it with drug addicts. They're not talking about it. They're doing it. This is going on right now in America, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and if you want to know why there is such an opioid epidemic, look at the profit incentives on the other side, which is the slave labor side.
There you go.
All they've got to do is get these kids addicted and pick them up. They go to...
Okay, we got the break. Hang on. We'll be back.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the third and final hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you as we are every Saturday. And it continues to be the 11th of November, 11-11, ladies and gentlemen, 2017. As we get right back into it, gosh, it's really hard to believe how fast this year has gone. We're just another couple of months, less than a couple of months, and 2017 will be history. Can you believe that? That's just incredible.
Time just moves so fast.
Yeah, it's frightening. We've been talking about the corporate slave camps existing inside the United States of America right now. I want people to go to the website, governamerica.com, under newest site editions. If you're listening on delay, or if you're listening years down the road, because the archives stay up on the website after we do the program, you can access this. It'll be in the show notes. Well, you know, if you're listening to the show, it'll be in the show notes for the show. But I think everyone needs to listen or to read this article. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's worth every minute that you spend, because they're talking about how, in fact, they say records show that courts send about 280 men to CAIR each year, and CAIR is spelled C-A-A-I-R, coming from throughout Oklahoma, along with some from Arkansas, Texas, and Missouri. Now, if you think this is something just in those states, you better think again. Vicki, you did a little digging, didn't you? And you said, I think you said, these kinds of things exist in every state of the union.
They do. And one of the people that I knew that was with an organization that is really a conservative and upstanding organization was proposing that we allow the sheriff to set up a work program. And the way that they sell this idea to people is that the prisoners in jail shouldn't be allowed to lounge around relaxing in jail. They should earn their keep. which, you know, if you think in a shallow way, yeah, that sounds good. But the problem with it is that what you're doing is that you're providing the profit incentive to put more people in
behind
jail.
Bars. And is that the reason why, you know, as these companies grow, as these companies get bigger, I would imagine, like any other private corporation, they can employ lobbyists, can they not?
And absolutely.
These
and
lobbyists can lobby for stricter laws to ensnare more people, to put more people behind bars, so that you have a never-ending pipeline of corporate slaves to work at your facilities.
I saw a piece of legislation that was proposed for the in Idaho. It was written by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange, and it was sponsored by American Bail Bonds. And what the proposal was is to increase the fine for a first-time DUI to $10,000 plus a jail term.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the bail bonds makes a lot of money. And, of course, if the sheriff is making money on the jail, there is incentive to put the person in jail.
Yes.
You know, all of our social decline, which we've had a tremendous social decline.
You think?
Yeah. And it seems like that it may very well be tied to the profit incentive for not only just the jail, but also the social services after jail. You know, the paying for monitoring, the paying for drug testing, all of the things that they make a person who's been put in jail for whatever reason pay for. They've made criminality a profit center.
Yes.
And so if there's corporations out there that are going to make profit by human tragedy, then you'll have more human tragedy. And that's just the way business works.
Yeah, reading from this article for a minute, it says no rehab better exemplifies an allegiance to big business than care. It was started in 2007 by chicken company executives struggling to find workers. Well, I'll just stop
there. They say that whole shortage shouting stuff.
Yes. If you're struggling to find workers as a corporation, then that means you're not offering enough money. Because I guarantee you, in this day and age especially, with so many people unemployed, if you offer enough money, you're going to find plenty of people willing to do the work. You know, this is the Robert Reich bull crap, the former labor secretary scumbag, all these illegals are just here to do the jobs Americans won't do. Well, yeah. I'm sorry, but there's nothing that Americans have ever not been willing to do. There are wages that Americans are not willing to work for, however, and that's really what the real issue is here. It is a global race to the bottom, and I know we talk about this often, but folks, what else is there to talk about? We're talking about the systematic decline in the ability for the American people to live. We're talking about really what boils down to genocide of the American population. Because when you can't afford to feed your family, and certain people talk about gardening, and you can garden and you can save a lot of money on groceries for those of you that garden, but how long will it be before they crack down on that? And you won't be allowed to garden.
Well, not everybody can garden, and that's one of those palliatives that might work for some people, but.
Especially if you live in a big city.
The idea that they would set social policy in such a way that you have to garden to feed your family. There's something really, really, really wrong with public policy from an American point of view, with the standard of living that we've had, with the kind of society that we've had, where they are promoting gardening as a solution to feed yourself.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that they're promoting that. I just brought that up because it dawns on me that at some point, under the guise of the environment, you won't be allowed to garden. I think of there's a rancher out west who's plowed his field. He was just prosecuted by the feds, or they went after him anyway. He just had to settle for an insane amount of money because they claimed that he was dredging his soil too deep. I mean, this is a kind of absolute insane nonsense that people are having to deal with, and these are private, you know, small food producers.
Well, you know what, and there was also an initiative about controlling the dust from farms.
Yes.
Well, that's just, you know, purely stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what makes me think that our government is not being run by Americans that have any sense at all.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't run a farm without a tractor running through there and it kicks up the dust, you know.
Yeah.
Deal with it. It's when I lived over in Boise, they built a housing development that was right on the edge of a farm. And the farmer would get out there, you know, like 5 a.m. and he'd be out, you know, on his tractor plowing his fields. And the people had the nerve to complain.
Yeah. Hang with me, caller. I'll get to you right here in just a second here. I want to share a couple of paragraphs of this. At CARE, they say about 200 men live on a sprawling grassy compound in northeastern Oklahoma, and most work full-time at Simmons Foods Incorporated, a company with annual revenue of $1.4 billion. They slaughter and process chickens for some of America's largest retailers and restaurants, including Walmart, KFC, and Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. They also make pet food for PetSmart and Rachel Ray's Nutrish brand. Simmons Foods now is so reliant on CARE for some shifts that the plants likely would shut down if the men didn't show up, according to former staff members and plant supervisors. Chicken processing plants are notoriously dangerous and understaffed. The hours are long, the pay is low, and the conditions are brutal. Men in the CARE program said their hands became gnarled after days spent hanging thousands of chickens in metal shackles. One man said he was burned with acid while hosing down a trailer. Others were maimed by machines or contracted serious bacterial infections. Those who were hurt and could no longer go back to work or no longer work often were kicked out of CARE and sent to prison, court records show. Most men worked through the pain, fearing the same fate. This is the United Slave States of America, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I won't read the whole article because, as I said, it's quite lengthy. You need to go to the website right now, governamerica.com. Read this if you haven't already. It is astounding to me. Not surprising so much, but just to see examples of real-life corporate slavery in the United States of America. And it's only going to get worse because, as Vicky said, there's a profit incentive involved
right
here.
There will always be a shortage of all types of workers, whether you're a nurse, a teacher, mm-hmm, a doctor, an IT person, which I was, a programmer, a farm worker. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. There are articles out there saying there are shortages of what you do for a living. And it's a propaganda campaign. And the objective is to drop the price of American labor to the global price.
Yes. The name of the game is equality, global equality, which everybody likes that word. Oh, equal. Oh, we all want to be equal. We want everything to be fair. Yeah, except that they're lowering your standard of living so that everything's equal with the third world. That's the UN system. Let's go to Kansas.
Let me read this to you. In this hearing, Bob Goodlatte, and I think this was the day one of the hearing, what he said was that commodities are, the price of commodities are set by the global market sets the price of commodities. Well, if the international market forces are setting prices for our domestic agricultural production, then they are also setting the precedent. Now, this is me talking, not him. He said that it is the international market that sets the price for our commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's true, then it's international market forces are also setting the price for the cost of production. Since labor is one of the biggest costs of production, that means that international market forces are setting the price for labor as a factor of production.
There you go.
So that's where I get the idea that they're dropping the price of labor down to the global price of labor to make everything equal across the world, and this is global communism.
This is a new international economic order.
Yeah.
When you make everything even, Stephen, across the board, it makes it very easy to merge everything together.
I believe that was Lenin's new economic strategy. I have a report called the New International Economic Order. It was produced by the UN organization called UNIDO, and it was the Declaration of Lima, I think. But I have to read that report. I've had it for a long time, but I haven't read the whole thing. But now that I understand that they're dropping our, that they're trying to create equal wages across the world,
which is global socialism. I want to get to the call though, so we don't keep them waiting too long. 844-646-8376 is the number, toll free 844-6-GOVERN. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Darren. Hi, Vicki.
Hi.
This is Sherry in Kansas.
How you doing?
Hi, Sherry.
I agree with you, Vicki. You're right on. That's what they're trying to do. It's my understanding, and from seeing a place I used to live close to, they had I think they still do have a processing plant for I think it was mainly hogs, but it's dominated now by, Mexicans and stuff. And that's just it. Those things are inherently dangerous. They try to rush it through too fast. There's lots of accidents. And, you're right. That's what they're trying to do is complete,
Well, just to illustrate your point, Sherry, is that one of the people in the article that was talked about, there was a mistake that happened with the equipment, and they dumped too much chicken on the conveyor belt. And there was a woman, I guess a woman, working side by side with the guy, and she reached into the chicken and ended up getting her glove caught in the conveyor belt, which was pulling. He tried to free her, ended up getting his stuck in the conveyor belt, and he couldn't free himself, and it started pulling him along the conveyor belt. He ended up incurring a major, I think it crushed his hand, as if I remember correctly. So after that, they actually had the audacity to accuse him of deliberately injuring himself so he wouldn't have to work. And they ended up sending him to prison.
Well, and you were saying that's what they're trying to do as far as lowering the, bringing us all down through that, the drug, the CIA and the military is helping, bringing in the drugs and the opioid thing going on. That's one way. And then another way they're doing it is, they're limiting our choices as far as keeping ourselves healthy and doing all they can to make sure we get sick. And then the more family members you have sick, the more other people around them have to dedicate their time and energy where they can't, use some of that energy to keep an eye on the people that are doing this to us, and that's one, that's one reason why they're getting away with all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, can't argue with you.
But
it's very alarming, and I wish more people were aware of all the stuff that's going on. How do we stop it? Well, I think local control is the only answer. I think that this kind of thing with these corporate prison camps, it needs to be outlawed. You know, in fact, I was glad. I think it was even the ACLU, which I'm not a fan of the ACLU for a variety of reasons, but I was glad to see that they are talking about at least filing a lawsuit on 13th Amendment grounds, because this is corporate slavery.
Yes, it is.
Now, I don't know how a federal court would come down.
It's subsidized labor for corporations is what it is. And I think that taxpayers should pay the cost of social problems so that they fix the social problems, not make profit for corporations.
Well, drug problems.
I don't believe in profiting on human tragedy. We had one guy that was running for governor in Idaho that he actually wanted to export Idaho prisoners to some other location. Well, you know, there was a movie in the 1970s called Papillon, and France was exporting their prisoners to French Guiana, and it was just horrendous. Horrendous what those men were living through on French Guiana.
And that was based on a two-story?
Yes, as I understand it, yes. The name of the movie was Papillon.
Okay.
If anybody wants to watch it, it had Steve McQueen in it and Dustin Hoffman, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, in this deal to bring all our wages down, you know, the Congress sure isn't, you know, they get their COLA every time. And, you know, I'm amazed how many people I know that have, you know, have a job that's based on, you know, tax money. Mm-hmm. And there's very few in my family that actually work for a living and go to the wealth, help create wealth as opposed to, you know,
sucking it out.
Their job based on getting tax money.
Well, every time a congressman says that they're creating jobs, that's exactly what they're doing. They are creating social jobs, which are just make work jobs to keep people working. Because as they manage the decline of our economy, they don't want the United States to be a producing economy other than intellectual property. But the thing is that in order to have an economy based on, I mean, talk about elitism. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just, where everybody is a world-class researcher.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Sherry. Appreciate the call there. God bless you.
And you can't have an economy like that. That's an abnormal distribution.
Yeah.
Throughout the population, it's just an abnormal distribution.
Speaking of abnormal things, we had $300 million in cryptocurrency vanished overnight. This is a good reason why you don't want to put your wealth in cryptocurrencies. They say that a user error is to blame. For $300 million in cryptocurrency, you know, apparently Bitcoin's meteoric rise in price has been accompanied by a predictably parallel rise and the contorted lunacy we seem to witness in every irrational bubble, no matter what its origin. The Bitcoin bubble delusion has become so convincing to some people that they now believe that Bitcoin is the new gold or better than gold. And yet Bitcoin, like every other cryptocurrency, is nothing more than a virtual shared spreadsheet that's subject to all the failings of software, cyber warfare, and even power grid failures.
You know what? The thought, the thought occurred to me that the Bitcoin system might have been developed for commodities trading that was going on over in the Middle East, because Saddam Hussein had economic sanctions on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kazakhstan developed a system whereby they could trade oil and different commodities. And the thought occurred to me that the Bitcoin system would work really, really well for that.
Yeah.
Assuming that nobody hacked it, of course.
Well, you know, see, here's the problem, and that's one issue. But the Federal Reserve has looked at, you know, cryptocurrency as being potentially a model, and I think that's really where it's headed, the model for the cashless society. I think that they're going to implement something like this. And here you have a perfect example as to why we don't want that. Stroke of the pen, and all of a sudden, all of your money is gone. If you're too outspoken, you know, a few keystrokes and all of your money is gone. Just this week, The Guardian reported, and this was from newstarget.com, The Guardian reported on how $300 million in Ether currency just vanished due to an accident, they say, committed by just one user. More than $300 million of cryptocurrency has been lost after a series of bugs in a popular digital wallet service led one curious developer to accidentally take control of and then lock up the funds, according to reports. So a user accidentally yeah. destroyed $300 million worth of people's cryptocurrency. Effectively, a user accidentally stole hundreds of wallets simultaneously and then set them on fire in a panic while trying to give them back, supposedly.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Here's okay, why you so don't want to put your faith in the cloud, listeners.
Hacking is now just an accident.
Yes, just an accident. And I'll tell you another accident we have going on. Google is locking Google Docs users out of their files. Did you hear about this one?
No, I didn't. Wow.
And consider it is the Washington Post is reporting this, and I don't like using the Washington Post. But they say, imagine you're working on a Google Doc, when seemingly out of nowhere, your ability to edit the online file gets revoked. What you see instead is an error message indicating that you violated Google's terms of service. For anyone who stores work in the cloud, suddenly being able to access your data, especially due to a terms of service violation, may sound scary. Oh, really? You think so? And it's really happening to some people, according to reports on Twitter. Rachel Bale, a wildlife crime reporter for National Geographic, said Tuesday that a draft of her story was frozen by Google. And she tweeted that out. Has anyone had Google Docs lock you out of a document before? My draft of a story about wildlife crime was just frozen for violating their TOS. Others have reported similar errors. Somebody said finalizing a piece on Europe post-socialist parties in Google Drive, and Google removes it because it's in violation of its terms of service. So,
yeah, somebody's got to sue on that.
Obviously. Well, rather than sue.
That's intellectual property. It's restraint of trade.
Well, here's why you don't. This is the problem with working in the cloud. And we talked about this when this whole, the new system is cloud computing. Everything is going into the cloud. Everybody, you know, we should all work in the cloud now. You don't need anything local on your hard drive. Nah, put it in the cloud. It's safe in the cloud. And I said at the time, what if the cloud goes poof? There goes all your work, all your data.
One of the things that our states were doing was putting their Medicaid systems up in the cloud to be run by some other service, you know, buying software as a service.
Yeah.
And they're basically just handing over control of their system to this.
Well, we got.
So, and I'm sure the Medicaid system is just one of the systems that has been taken over.
Yeah.
You know, as a function of our government taken over by a private corporate entity.
There you go. All right, we got the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us, folks. Final segment straight ahead. All right, we're in the home stretch of the broadcast here, talking about the cloud computing and the perils of having things in the cloud. I want to make it clear, I don't have a problem with using the cloud for backup purposes. I think that's probably smart. But you better have you better not put all your trust in having stuff on somebody else's computer. That's just never a good idea, and that's unfortunately where we seem to be taking society at large. Speaking of big corporations that do bad things, I mean, Facebook is always the name of Facebook can always come up in that regard. One of the founders, one of the designers of the Facebook platform, just came out in an interview with Axios. Sean Parker is his name. And he talks about how they're exploiting human psychology. There was an interview that he did with Axios, and I'll just share some of the key points here. When Facebook was getting going, he said, "I had these people who would come out to me and say, 'I'm not on social media,' and I would say, 'Okay, you know, you will be.' And when they would say, 'No, I value my real-life interactions, I value the moment, I value presence, I value intimacy,' he says, I would say, 'We'll get you eventually.'" Now, this is a guy, just to give you a little background, he is a guy that helped design the website. He's 38 now, founder and chairman of the Parker Institute for Cancer and Immunotherapy, and he spoke at this Axios event at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, ironically, about accelerating cancer innovation. In the green room, he mentioned that he had become something of a conscientious objector on social media. But he says, among other things, "I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying, because of the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to 1 billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other. It probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. The thought process that went into the building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time as a conscious attention and conscious attention as possible. And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's what's going to get you to contribute more often, get you to contribute content. And that's going to get you more likes and comments. It's a social validation feedback loop," he says. "Exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology." This is one of the designers of Facebook talking. He says,
"Yeah,
the inventors, creators like me. It's me. It's Mark talking about Zuckerberg. It's Kevin Systrom on Instagram. It's all of these people understood this consciously, and we did it anyway."
Yeah, all you have to do is present a problem to a programmer, and they will find a solution for it. And that's really been my concern all along with using computers in schools.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers, the parents, nobody really knows what the programmer did in that system.
Yeah.
And they could change things slightly, you know, depending upon the student's profile. I mean, there is just so many monstrous things that could be done.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, they can do really incredibly wonderful things too. I mean, don't get me wrong here, but I don't think that it's a good idea to have children interacting one on one
with machines.
with machines. I think it should, you know, they should have class software.
Well,
that's shown to the whole class at the same time so that the teacher can see it, all the students see the same thing, then that would be okay.
And it's bad enough that they encourage you to send all of your information, all your family life, all your social circles, all your friends and acquaintances to this big black hole called, you know, this Pandora's box that we can't really look into, to them, but now they're wanting your nude photos.
Studies show that 4% of internet users have become victims of revenge porn. For women under 30, it's 10%. And the experts say the reason so many ex and angry partners post revenge porn on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is because it hits close to home, meaning the pictures are accessible to family and friends. So Facebook is launching a pilot program beginning in Australia to help victims fight back. Here's the deal. If you've ever shared nude or sexual images with a partner and you're afraid someday they'll end up on the web, you can send those same images to yourself on Messenger, and then Facebook will go in and make a digital fingerprint of each picture and automatically block any attempt to upload that same image. But there's a catch, and it's a big one. Before Facebook can block your nude pictures, they have to look at your nude pictures. Turns out a crew of specially trained Facebook employees view all the pics, decide if they qualify as revenge porn, and then add the digital fingerprint. Facebook will then keep the pictures on file for an undisclosed amount of time before deleting them. Facebook security says, quote, "We are aware that having people self-report their images carries risk, but it's a risk we are trying to balance real-world harm that occurs every day when people, mostly women, can't stop non-consensual intimate imagery from being posted." Of course, analysts point out that social media companies are just as vulnerable to being hacked as anybody else, which is why experts say the only safe nude photos are the ones that are not taken.
Can you believe that? I envision a bunch of these kind of tech guys sitting around in an office and saying, you know, we've got a great platform here. How can we get really hot women to send in their photos to us with them naked? Oh, I know. We'll say it's...
You don't think men would do that, do you?
Well, in a day when a lot of people are being outed, supposedly for being perverts, and many of them are in the tech industry, but really every industry, yeah, that would never happen. That's beyond the pale.
I can't imagine anybody being dumb enough to do that.
Oh, but why would people be dumb enough to tell all their details?
Well,
we're going on vacation, everybody.
I have a
we're
Facebook
going on vacation,
account,
so here's my house.
Nothing on me.
It's incredible. Incredible. Well, the Star Spangled Banner is racist. You know, as the cultural Marxists are targeting every single thing about our country, here's another avenue. Ron just sent me this this story here.
Written in 1814, President Woodrow Wilson recognized the Star Spangled Banner as the national anthem in 1916, and Congress later affirmed it. Though heard all the time, the song itself rarely drew much attention until NFL players began kneeling during the anthem as a way to protest social injustice. That's when the California NAACP took a closer look at the words.
It's racist. It doesn't represent our community. It's anti-black people. The real intention got overlooked, and it's become something that's dividing us. And I'm looking for a way to bring us back together.
Francis Scott Key wrote the lyrics as he watched British warships bomb Fort McHenry in Baltimore. Here are the words in the rarely sung third stanza the NAACP finds offensive. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave.
We don't use that third bar. We don't readily hear it. So why not just take it out? If it's offensive to some people and it's hurtful, then I say take it out.
Historians, however, strongly disagree about the context of those lyrics. Here's why. Hireling and slave refer to black slaves liberated by the British, some of whom fought against the states. To Key, they were mercenaries and traitors. But that doesn't mean the song celebrates slavery, say most historians. The British also also manipulated blacks to fight with the unfulfilled promise of freedom. And lyrics elsewhere refer to blacks and whites alike as free men fighting for the states.
It's a song. Keep it original. That, I mean, it's like messing with somebody's Picasso art because you didn't like how her nose was too big.
Critics say the group is creating a controversy where none exists.
The NAACP is now hoping a member of Congress will sponsor their bill to kill or change the Star Spangled Banner as our national anthem.
So every single thing about the United States of America has to be undone.
Yes.
That's what it really boils down to.
It's de-ideologizing the state. Every national symbol, everything that makes America, America, has to be gone, eliminated under the system of global governance.
Yes, absolutely.
We've got to all stand and salute the UN.
The UN and the technocrats running it.
Yes.
So we have another story, another Ron story was, we were talking a moment ago about tech and the various attacks on everything. We hear a lot today about cybersecurity. His local news station did a report on, basically, it was an investigation into cyber attacks on the grid. I found this very interesting.
Cyber attackers are constantly trying to hack our most critical sector, electricity.
A successful attack on the power grid could do everything from derailing a train to shutting off water. Fox Files investigator Chris Hayes is here now.
Sandy and Shirley, software company Symantec is tracking a cyber espionage group called Dragonfly that's targeting North America and Europe in ways that could, quote, severely disrupt some operations. Symantec says some nuclear plants have reported being compromised by attackers. Investigators are also concerned about low-tech attacks. Power companies are forced to combat more than just natural disasters. Sometimes investigators don't immediately know the cause, like right after this 2009 Washington, D.C. train derailment.
For the first 12 hours or so, it was unclear whether or not it was a simple mechanical failure or whether it was actually something more malicious than that.
A team of investigators found a mechanical failure in that case, but in 2013 at a Silicon Valley substation, investigators found a person to blame. A sniper shot out 17 transformers.
This was an unprecedented and sophisticated attack on an electric grid substation.
The FBI is investigating. And the 2014 Ferguson power outage still remains unsolved. Thousands of homes lost power for an hour on Halloween after Fox 2 confirmed a vandal cut a lock leading to a device controlling power to 2,125 homes.
Anything above ground, if it's vulnerable to Mother Nature, it's vulnerable to people.
Emergency management professional Jim Sharp says some terrorists may look for low-tech ways to attack.
Why build a car bomb anymore when the car can be the terrorist weapon? You don't have to do anything special to that.
He points to thousands of power stations still above ground.
Most people don't even, you know, perceive them anymore. They're just part of the landscape.
And he says he's found a potential vulnerability at the Labadie power plant.
It's very obvious. There's a single rail line that brings the coal to Labadie, and that's the power that generates the electric power that goes out.
Oh, let's just tell everybody where the single vulnerability is. What a great idea.
Coal can't get in. That power station has a problem.
Ameren declined to comment and asked that we contact its association, the Edison Electric Institute, whose security and preparedness director, Scott Aronson, told us from Washington, D.C., the industry is aware of its weak spots and daily reports of attackers.
There are any number of threats that are out there. There are any number of threat actors. And so it is so important for us as a sector not to get wrapped around the axle on one specific threat, but to be aware of all of these threats and then have contingencies in place to be able to respond and recover.
Aronson points to the infamous Silicon Valley sniper attack as an example of the industry's ability to respond.
The lights in both San Francisco and in Silicon Valley didn't even blink. And that goes to this point of defense in depth. And the idea is not to put all of your eggs in the prevention basket, but to also look at response and recovery in the eventuality that somebody is successful.
Aronson said the industry has a tremendous ability to work together and reroute power throughout what he says are 55,000 substations nationwide.
That's a lot of substations, Chris. It seems like that would force companies to work with their competitors, does it?
Yeah, just like in a storm where other states will send in workers from out of state. And Aronson says they're also working with governments to combat these threats.
I don't know what she's talking about. I don't think she knows what she's talking about. working with your competitors. Most of these power companies are monopolies. I think all of them are monopolies. But the grid is designed for you to share resources and be able to make it easy to buy power from one part of the country to the other from your competitor, or from people. Basically, it makes everybody a partner in electricity generation.
Right. Well, and the transmission grid is managed by, regulated by a North American association of power companies. So, what they've tried to do is to introduce competition into a natural monopoly. But what they've done is provide a design a gifting profit extraction from the electric utilities, and it's at our expense.
Yeah.
Because the electric, everybody pays they should pay the same price for their electricity. So if the government is adding in middlemen that have to make a profit, then they're basically adding cost onto the price of our electric bill.
Yeah, what a mess. I mean, what a mess this
whole
thing is.
It's a total cluster. Our country, from an administrative standpoint, is a total cluster.
We have ID cards now, universal ID cards in the works that are being tested out in certain countries. One of them is called Dermalog.
Hamburg, a city with a long trading history, is the hometown of Dermalog, which is the largest German biometrics company with more than 130 international installations. Today, the Artemis sailing ship returns with the Dermalog crew from a short trip on the River Elbe. They have been working on new ideas for new inventions. Back in the head office, a customer from Nigeria is visiting the company. Mr. Ade Shonubi is welcomed by CEO Günter Moll, who shows him around and demonstrates some of the newest Dermalog devices. We ask Mr. Shonubi what he expects from the future after improving the banking system in Nigeria with the support of Dermalog.
I see a future where we move around freely without cards, without cash, and we can pay for goods or services. We can go into buildings where we want or are expected to go without carrying anything extra.
You can be tracked everywhere you go. Sorry. Let me get back to this.
Your identification is a part of you. That's the future I see.
Your identification is a part of you, he says.
So let's fly to Lagos and take a look.
What's that? Say it again.
I said the future I see is a nightmare of control.
There you go.
Anything extra, and your identification is a part of you. That's the future I see.
So let's fly to Lagos and take a look at the current progress in Nigeria. Dermalog's AFIS installation for the Nigerian banks was the world's largest biometrics project in 2014. 50,000 bank customers are being enrolled in 2014 and 2015. Banking has become much easier, with fingerprints replacing PIN numbers and passwords, and enabling transactions in many other fields. The Dermalog AFIS is connected to more than 10,000 registration terminals with the Dermalog LF10 fingerprint scanners, and to more than 20,000 ZF1 verification units. The system ensures that every Nigerian citizen has only one single identity and does not open different accounts under different names. Here in Lagos, they know why Dermalog was a good choice of partner for this project.
Dermalog was looking at a relationship and not just at a contract. Talking to them showed that they had as much interest in how we would make it work rather than just signing a piece of paper and paying them and buying a box. And I think that's really what made the difference for us. And it's been a wonderful relationship.
Another important market for Dermalog is Asia. One major project can be found in Cambodia, where Dermalog has installed a new national ID card and e-passport system. Here in the capital, Phnom Penh, and in 24 other provinces, the 15 million people in Cambodia
genetic counselors in Boston are offering.
Sorry.
Anything extra, and your identification is a part of you. That's the future I see.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'm going to get out of it. I screwed it up. I'm sorry. But you get the idea. This is where it's coming. We're coming down to the cashless society here, and where everywhere you go, you're going to have this universal ID that's based upon your biometric information. And now, so it's not surprising that we have now babies being scanned their DNA at birth.
Genetic counselors in Boston are offering new parents a controversial peek at their baby's future health. It's part of a landmark study that could lead to gene scans for all infants at birth. By law, every newborn in America gets a blood test for about 30 conditions. They include cystic fibrosis and sickle cell anemia. A trial underway at Brigham and Young and Women's Hospital uses genomic sequencing to screen for about 1,800 conditions, including some cancers. Tony DeCopel visited the program to see the benefits and some of the concerns. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. By testing babies long before they show symptoms, doctors hope to start treatment early. That could save lives and prevent suffering. But it also raises questions of privacy and discrimination, and that's a major reason why most families are still saying no thanks.
What is it? Is it a flower?
The day after their daughter Cora was born.
Is it Daddy? Good job!
Lauren Stetson and her husband Kyle got an unexpected visit from a genetic counselor.
I was in full recovery mode, as in, I don't care about anything. I'm just trying to keep our baby alive and recover myself.
The visitor offered a free DNA scan for Cora, a scan that the Stetsons learned could reveal disease-causing variations in their daughter's genetic code.
I was just trying to make it through the day, so that was definitely something that was a little shocking.
Baby Cora is now one of the first healthy kids in America to have had her genome searched for hidden problems. Mm-hmm. Doctors found a partial biotinides deficiency, something that Cora showed no outward signs of having. Had it not been detected, it could have caused a permanent drop in her IQ.
It's a pretty insane thing to think about.
She would have still been considered normal. Nobody would have identified her as diseased.
Dr. Robert Green is a medical geneticist at Harvard and co-director of the BabySeq Project, which enrolled Cora and is now recruiting hundreds of other families.
So you could potentially save a child's life?
Absolutely.
But Dr. Green is also warning families about the risks, including breaches of privacy and genetic discrimination.
You think?
We can't predict what kind of discrimination is going to be occurring by the time your child grows up. We can't predict whether there's some sort of privacy breaches and this information gets out and is used against your child in some sort of future scenario.
Okay, that was about half of that report. There's more to it. All of this stuff will be in the show notes.
I find the whole thing just absolutely horrifying.
Me too.
That they would do that, because I know that they are going to use that to find candidates that they want to study genetically, to experiment on genetically.
Well, the idea is,
terrorize a parent saying that there's something potentially wrong with your baby, and they've got a candidate.
And we have
for most people,
undoubtedly, being a database of everybody's DNA is being formed for the future.
In January, by the way, it's the law that you must have a real ID.
There you
internal,
go.
Basically an internal passport.
Yep.
So we're on the way. We're on the way there.
Exactly. All right. Final thing in the realm of tracking people everywhere they go. Here's the streetlights. Phillips, the electric company, just put out a promotional video which features Ed Ibrahimian, who is the Bureau of Street Lighting Director in Los Angeles, California. He talks about how they are using streetlights to incorporate various sensors into the infrastructure.
Street lighting is deployed, exists all over the city in public right-of-way, and I think the infrastructure is just ready to be the backbone of smart city deployments, whether it's EV charging stations, whether it's cameras, whether it's sensors, whether it's controls. We have the infrastructure in place with street lighting.
We're running
running this pilot in addition to the controls that we're deploying in the city to be able to see if we could maybe evaluate different types of sensors that can be connected to these controls and bring the information to us through the cell phone technology and through the nodes and the city touch that we've deployed. A noise monitoring is something, a sensor that we're evaluating as we speak. I think to be able to monitor the noise level gives the ability to know what's happening in different parts of the city. Once the technology is proven, we'll be able to bring us a lot of information. That information can be used by fire department, the police department, the mayor's office, and can also be used for citizens of the city of Los Angeles.
There you go.
You know what? Do people notice that that guy's a German? Do people know that what they're implementing is a Stasi surveillance and control system? Don't they know that they're going to be prisoners?
No. No, they don't.
Jeez.
Our listeners do. But this is the future. The future is now, ladies and gentlemen. This is what we have to look forward to. If and your children and grandchildren, if people don't come out and get active and do the best they can to counter this stuff, it's huge. But God is on our side. Anyway, we got to go. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. And join us back here next week as we'll have, I'm sure, more to talk about. Never seems to end.
It never ends. We always have.
All right. Keep your chin up, folks. Don't get discouraged. We have a lot to be thankful for. And as we approach this Thanksgiving season, we just have to keep that in mind. We didn't get into this mess overnight, and we won't get out of it overnight. All right. That's it. Let's head for the hills. God bless you, folks. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you, Darren.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.